The Bengals Beat podcast is proudly sponsored by 50 West Brewing Company. Now is the time to head out to the production works. It's where we've held our live BBPs. It's home to the incomparable madness that is the 50 West Punch-Out. The place is buzzing every night with sand volleyball leagues, canoeing, kayaking, cycling, trivia, running groups. It's all based out of the Pro Works down on Wooster Pike. You may even spot Optimistic Bobby preaching the Laser Cats gospel. Hope to see you soon at 50 West, where every beer is a journey. Come join for the ride. Cincinnati Inquirer's Bengals Beat podcast, sponsored by 50 West Brewing Company.
Every week, your Bengals beat writers, fantasy football failure Fletcher Page and Paul Danner Jr. take you inside Paul Brown Stadium.
We're plugged into the club from the front office to the field. Win or lose, hiring or firing, we're always here to keep you in the loop. Let's go. Right, welcome into a special road trip edition of the BBP, the Bengals Beat podcast, presented as always by our great friends, makers of delicious beer at 50 West Brewing Company. I'm Paul Danner Jr. I'm in the navigational passenger seat. My man Kareem Elgazar, photographer, video journalist, visual journalist extraordinaire. Is a wheel man, as we know.
Behind the wheel.
Always behind the wheel. Got us, we're north of Columbus still as we trek back from Cleveland after the Bengals L. Fletcher, backseating it. Lots of room to spread out.
Just taking in all the places in Ohio I've never seen before.
Yeah. I know, you get to go north. There's lots of good stuff up here.
Oh, definitely. I had a great time in Cleveland. My first time in Cleveland was a success, I believe.
Yeah, it was
myself.
Yeah, no, success for us, for sure, thanks to the good folks at Great Lakes Brewing Company, who didn't mind us enjoying ourselves for a number of Christmas ales and
Yelling loud
yelling inside of their facility and enjoying that. So it's always the best part of going to Cleveland. The worst part of going to Cleveland is when your team stinks.
That's right.
And that was the case on Sunday, the latest sort of, I use the phrase fuel on the dumpster fire right now, because it's just to get destroyed by the Browns again. Because they're not just losing. They have been outscored in the first halves of these Browns games, 44-7, and getting swept by the Browns for the first time since 2002. Damn.
I mean, I'm just thinking that you know, what is that, 16 years? The first time they've been swept by the Browns?
Pre-Marv.
I mean,
that sweep led to the firing of Dick LeBeau and hiring of Marvin Lewis.
And we're not talking about a field goal, losing by a field goal, or, you know, one score. The Bengals are getting balled on.
Yeah.
You know?
They are getting balled on. They had a lot of garbage time scores to make the score seem respectable, but inevitably, it was over way before that.
Yeah, and the Browns have an interim coach and a rookie quarterback, and it's not like,
well,
you know,
that coach is 5-2 now since taking over. Obviously, Hugh did not have that good of a record. Freddie Kitchens, man, I gotta tell you, their OC, he's got something cooking.
Yeah, their offense is fun to watch.
They do all kinds of stuff. You know, it's creative. There's a lot of misdirection. They take advantage of some stuff people do well. So the receivers made some great catches today. Njoku's a freak. I mean, and Baker's kind of, he's the punky QB that is directing it all. And they're going to be a problem for a long time, I think. I mean, a long time. Used to getting swept potentially, because they have the ability to do that.
I mean, and they've got pass rushers too. I mean, it's not like they can't get after the QB. They got Myles Garrett. You know, they got Denzel Ward's a good. I mean, they've got the pieces there. They're gonna. They're only better.
There were 63,000 people there. We haven't seen 63,000 people at a football game because, you know, in Los Angeles we were at that little soccer stadium.
But yeah.
They were chanting Baker's name. This was a meaningless December game. There was nothing on the line.
But they were excited.
But they were.
They're pumped.
Drunk on Baker.
They're drunk on Baker. They are drunk. They're doing Baker bongs. You know, it's like they're just getting ripped. Yeah, you know, because it's been so long since they've had anything resembling competent quarterback play and any reason to have real hope. And they have more than just hope right now. I mean, they've got a certainty that they're in a good place. Now that we've talked about them, let's talk about this team, I guess. We're sort of at the what do you say point, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't have anything to say. No, I mean, like, just from what you mentioned, the offensive coordinator, you know, for the Browns, kept the Bengals defense all day long on their heels. Mm-hmm. And you thought that, you know, yes, despite all the injuries to the offensive side of the ball and some injuries to the defensive side of the ball, that the defense would keep the Bengals in the game. But, you know, the defense, I was surprised to see that the defense didn't actually – no pressure on Baker Mayfield. He had, like, half an hour to throw each time he stepped back. I was a little disappointed in the defensive play today, thinking that they would actually keep the team, you know, in the game.
Yeah, they did. I mean, the lack of pressure – this is now twice that the Browns' offensive line has just owned the Bengals' defensive line, and that's – you know, yeah, there's no Carl Lawson, but there's Gino, there's Carlos, there's Sam Hubbard, there's Andrew Billings. I mean, these are all their guys. These are their guys, and they are just getting stonewalled by this Browns front just to do whatever they want to.
Yeah, no sacks on Baker in either game this year. You know, but Baker completed 73% of his passes, 7 touchdowns, no interceptions, and averaged 9 yards per attempt against the Bengals this season.
Yo, that's brutal.
I'm just throwing that out there. Sorry for the buzzkill.
No, I mean, look, hey, I love a buzzkill. I mean, I'm Paul Downer Jr., and I'm proud of it, okay? It was pointed out to me by a loyal listener and reader and Twitter follower, actually the one who basically invented the Paul Downer Jr. hashtag, that I use almost 30% of my words in the lead couple of graphs that were just totally just awful derogatory phrases about the Bengals. I was like, is it over the top? I don't know. It's where we're at. So I guess let's talk about the elephant suffocating everyone in the room. And you know, we do this, we end up in this spot after every game, and we discuss it over and over again.
Talking about hashtag Marvie's gotta go.
Marvie from Rita. Rita trying to get Marvie must go.
Marvie must go.
It was hashtag Marvie must go from some middle-aged woman named Rita on Twitter. God bless her. Everybody's got an opinion now. Look, we all know that is a thing that needs to happen.
Right.
And again, it's again, like I said, I feel like we always have to say that now because we've been talking about it so much. But yes, the sense is that it's actually gonna happen this time, but that's speculative because only one person matters in this scenario, and that's Mike Brown. But I'm telling you, getting balled on by the Cleveland Browns twice. Cleveland Browns is still a thing for Mike, okay?
Yeah.
That has never gone away, what happened with his dad and everything else. So, right. You know, that getting balled on by the Cleveland Browns twice and embarrassed and looking lost and behind the times, that matters. And you throw that in with all the empty stadiums and everything else.
I was just going to mention that. You know, you get crushed by the Browns twice. And that first game, it was irredeemably bad.
Yeah.
Okay? And then, you know, how do you get to any chief executive's attention? How do you get a chief executive's attention? By not buying their product.
Yeah.
And when you don't show up for the games and you lose to the Browns twice, you're probably going to lose your job. You should lose your job, rather.
Yeah. Three straight losing seasons. I mean, look, you can blame this or blame that. Over the course of 3 years, you've gone 6-9-1, 7-9, and now whatever you're going to end up being this year. If they lose next week, obviously be 6-10. I mean, it's just time, and it's fine. Look, it's fine if you kept even that you kept them for all this time, whatever. But you cannot have where they're at as a franchise and continue to go forward with Marvin Lewis. You just can't. And I would just hate to see A, my Twitter mentions, B, what that stadium would look like next year if they actually kept Marvin Lewis for another year. I just it seems so unfathomable. I just can't even imagine doing that.
Yeah, I don't really have anything else to add except, you know, Marvin did a good job bringing his franchise from where it was, made a lot of great changes, ultimately kind of fell short of, you know, fulfilling all the goals that they wanted to, but he did a great job, and I understand that it's just time to move on. There's nothing else to say.
Yeah, everybody knows it. Everybody knows, and maybe Mike knows it. I don't know. Maybe he has already made up his mind, you know. And I would say if you made up your mind, just say it now. You know, you could come down on Monday and be like, we're gonna move on from Marvin after the season. We're gonna let him finish out this last game. Six. Okay, hopefully not for our six.
I got something I gotta do.
Got a thing. I mean, come out and say, look, this is gonna be it.
Yeah.
We still try to send them out with a win and everyone move forward and, you know, say your niceties.
A victory lap.
Of sorts.
Of sorts.
Yeah.
That's a really good point you bring up, Fletcher, in that, you know, before Marvin arrived, you know, you're trying to give Marvin some credit.
Yeah.
Before Marvin arrived, I mean, the complete dark ages that it was for, what was it, 12, 13 years?
Right.
I don't even want to speculate how many average wins they had per season, but let's just say 3 or 4. And then, you know, and also credit Marvin for working with Mike Brown, you know, changing some of the culture, right? You know, Mike Brown's, okay, all right, Marvin, you want to make more decisions, all right, more personnel decisions. Yes, it's been a long process, but that's a good point you bring up about, okay, but it's still time to go.
Yeah.
You know, it's really still time. You did a lot for this franchise, but it's still time to go.
Yeah. You can write a nice thank you letter and, you know, and
a full page ad in the paper.
Hey, you know? hey, we're still trying to sell papers over here. Absolutely. You know, you can do that and everybody can go about their business and do their thing.
And the point that I think we've made many times over too on this podcast is that whoever gets the job, assuming that Marv goes, the roster is in decent shape to have success pretty quickly, and that the new coach can come in and kind of do what Marvin did when he came in, which is assessing the culture or the way things are set up and maybe putting his own spin on it. And like Paul said, I mean, this roster there's a lot of advantageous things about this roster.
Yeah, there was a really, really great piece by Kevin Clark of The Ringer this week about the NFL finally undergoing their analytics revolution. Say, all the other sports have had huge analytics revolutions in the last 10, 20 years. Baseball, certainly with their sabermetrics and Moneyball and all that stuff. And basketball has been huge into that in recent years, too. But the NFL always was sort of behind in that stuff. And he wrote about how it's the smart teams are getting much smarter, and it's very clear who the dumb teams are who are not using that stuff right, because it makes the gap huge, because there's so much information that they have. Now, this is the first year that the league has shared all the – they have chips on all the shoulder pads, so you know how fast guys are running, how many steps they're taking, where they're – you know, when guys wear down – from having to do that, he said you get to get such game plan specifics, such as running away from the other team's sideline if you find that you can wear down like a defensive tackle that rotates in and out, and things like that, where you see them wear down over a course against things like that. But there's just so much information. You have to have the people there and the understanding of how to deal with it to actually get something positive out of it. And look, Marvin said that Hugh has helped him with some of the analytics stuff when he came here. And Hugh was the like non-analytics guy in Cleveland with their whole analytics setup. So I don't think that they're on the cutting edge of that. Do they have people that do that stuff? Yes. But they're certainly not in the McVay, you know, these teams that utilize that stuff to their advantage. And we're even seeing some of that with Cleveland. That's part of the new setup that a new coach would need to have is somebody who can try to get you back on the cutting edge a little bit more and not make you feel like you're so behind the times, because it's never been more critical to not fall behind with all the stuff that people are doing with all this information.
Right, and there's no question that's whenever we say the game might have passed you by a little bit, I think Marvin's behind on that. He was asked about that on Friday before the Browns game, and he kind of had that conspiracy tinge to his answer, because he said that a lot of times people might find confirmation bias in the numbers, or you might use analytics to confirm your eye test, what you already knew. And I was like, I don't know if this is being implemented properly.
No.
If that's the conversation you're having about your analytics.
Yeah, exactly. No, I would agree. So there's all that. And then there's obviously the Hughes situation. If they let go of Marvin Lewis, they would, you know, they're mandated to have a search and have to bring lots of people in. And things like that. So I think that there would be a full search if they did do that move. Hugh would certainly be one of the people I would imagine interviewed. I just don't think they should go that route. But a report surfaced from Adam Schefter earlier today that Vance Joseph, if he's let go by Denver, would obviously be a fit for the Bengals defensive coordinator. We've been calling him future Bengals defensive coordinator Vance Joseph for a couple of weeks now, knowing how much of a fit that would be. And we've even discussed the idea of he might not be a bad head coach, even just because he became a head coach probably a little earlier than he should have in Denver. And I think he could be somebody that probably is now more into the time when he would be ready to assume that next level. If he hadn't gotten hired so early in Denver, and you could see him having learned from some stuff there too.
This is sloppy to me, man. You know what I mean? Like this report, it's assuming that, I guess, Marvin or Hugh is the head coach.
I would assume that it's assuming that Hugh would be the head coach, and you would have Hugh and then Vance on defense, and Hugh essentially as offensive coordinator.
Play caller.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, because that way you have a lot of the staff would probably stay in place. I don't know how many changes Hugh would make or Vance would make if that was an actual thing that was happening. But it's going to be madness. If there's coaching search, when you get into the staff and what happens to everybody, all bets go off if they move on from Marvin. So it's really very speculative at this point. But it is interesting that you would see somebody like Schefter say that specifically. I don't think it's obvious that they would have interest in Vance Joseph as a defensive coordinator, but how could you even talk about that until you know who the head coach would be?
Speculation December.
Yeah. So let's talk about Vontaze Burfict real quick. How many times have we said that on this podcast? We got to talk about intent. And so the latest was, you know, he came back from his concussion that he suffered against Denver at the beginning of the month and played a half and then got concussed again. And then as he is walking off the field with trainers, Bengals head trainer Paul Sparling has sort of got his hand guiding him, essentially, and I think was telling...
As trainers do.
Always. I mean, they're there to help you. Right. They're trying to help you.
Right.
And he swipes, just swipes down hard and, like, basically hits his arm off of him as they came to the sideline. I assume he told him that he's got to take his helmet, he's got to go do the concussion test, and he's going to be out, because you're coming back from a concussion and you get another one, like, it doesn't really matter. You know what I mean? And he had... And it's just... It's pathetic, and it's embarrassing. I mean, it's also par for the course. Because it's just... The guy is there to help you. He's trying to help you, and you're going to basically, essentially, attack him.
Does Vontaze not want to play football ever again? Because
he's trending that way.
I mean, I'm asking that, you know, yes, obviously it's a rhetorical question, but it seems like he's deliberately doing stuff on and off the field, not just, we all know his track record going back several years, but, you know, okay, not playing in December, I understand you have concussions, and doing this stuff with someone who's trying to help you. Your reputation already is already in a tough spot. And then you keep doing this kind of stuff. No one's going to want to hire you to be on their team.
No.
And I can't... Even if you're a tremendous player.
I just can't... I can't imagine bringing him... Like, this is just like a final straw thing to me. And, I mean, dude, this is his seventh concussion. And the second one that we know of. I mean, it's... And he's playing bad, and he doesn't seem to care. And you're, you know, just... That stuff is just bad.
I'm just tired of Tez just dominating the focus, because he can't even walk to the sideline without... You have to keep your eyes on him.
Yeah.
He had a late hit where he landed on a player that had already been clearly tackled.
Yeah.
And he was still talking trash after a couple plays. It's just like you have to... We've seen it earlier in the year when he came to the sideline. He was arguing with some of the staff, some of the trainers then. And you just have to keep watching him, because you don't know what's going to happen. And I'm just tired of watching him.
Yeah. Everybody is. It should be. And it's fake tough stuff. You know, that's why it's sad and pathetic. And quitting on your team. Doesn't care about his team or the people that are trying to help him. I mean, that seems to be apparent.
But if you're going to act, you're going to do this kind of crap, okay? And you can tolerate it as an employer, as a team, when you're playing very well on the field. But you're still continuing to do this crap and not playing well.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So, I mean, something's got to give.
Yeah. Andrew Hawkins had a really interesting thread of tweets about this topic, talking about, from a player's perspective, of when you're concussed, you're not in your right mind. Like, you don't even know what you're doing and how, you know, your brain is injured, you know, and there is, you can't hold him as responsible for doing something while he's concussed and has a brain injury. He looked so weird when he sustained the concussion. He was like doing this weird laying on his back on top of Niles Scott, Christian Ringo, and it was odd, and I think they saw how he was looking in his eyes, and that's why they were like, okay, you need to just, you're done, and it caused that reaction from him, but so that it is a weird space,
and
right?
And I understand, like you laid out, there's some frustration if somebody's telling you, like, you got to go into protocol.
Yeah.
I understand that's a frustrating moment.
And it may be the last time we see him on a field.
Right.
You know? I mean, unless someone's going to take a chance on him, that could be the last thing he ever does in the NFL, is that swipe at the trainer. you know? And that's it's a crazy thought. It's an odd discussion, but it's just what you gotta have, I guess, with him. What else do we got here? So here's the setup now for the Steelers game. So the Steelers lose to the Saints on Sunday. The Ravens upset the Chargers this weekend. So the Ravens went from a 4.7% chance to win the North 6 weeks ago to currently in first place in control of their own destiny to get a home game in the playoffs. So next week, the Bengals and Steelers, the Steelers will be dependent on needing the Browns to go to Baltimore and win. If the Browns go to Baltimore and win, and the Steelers beat the Bengals, then the Steelers will win the AFC North. But if they can't, they won't make the playoffs. They won't be in the Steelers won't be in the playoffs at all.
It's kind of fitting two matchups with Pittsburgh and Cincinnati both having some troubles trending down. You've got Cleveland and Baltimore facing off two rookie quarterbacks. And the second half of their seasons have been great.
Yeah, they've both been very good. I mean, it is not out of the question that Cleveland will go down to Baltimore and win. I don't know what the spread is, but I'm going to guess that's probably like a Baltimore by 2 or 3 or something. Like
they match up pretty well.
Yeah, Cleveland has already beaten Baltimore once this year. Now, they didn't face them with Lamar Jackson, who's obviously made a difference for them. But... I wonder if it could be it for Mike Tomlin if they don't make the playoffs. Just because he was really under fire last year when they got beat by the Jags in the postseason, and his whole talk about like with New England that we'll see them again in the championship game, and that backfired on him. And then to just not even make the playoffs with that roster and with Ben Roethlisberger and all the drama that they have of losing to Oakland, and like, it's just, I wonder if both head coaches that are going to coach on Sunday will be coaching their last game with these teams.
Yeah, we could see this division have three new head coaches next season.
Yeah, Harbaugh's the only one that's solid. They actually came out and said they're working on an extension with him, and he's going to come back next year. Lamar Jackson saved his job.
He's done a great job coaching too. This last little run here. I mean,
dude, they
throwing in Lamar and changing the kind of the whole situation for him and defensively. You know, I mean, the Ravens. He's done a good job with the Ravens the last several weeks.
Man, I got to tell you that there isn't that much difference between the Ravens and this Bengals team. Yeah. Like, as far as, you know, players and roster and even some of the injury stuff that both sides have gone through. I mean, they're in their backup quarterback now, and they've found a way to put it together and make a run. I think John Harbaugh's a great coach.
Yeah, they got some practice squad guys like Gus Edwards.
Yeah, those guys, they can't. You're not going to win games with
those
guys.
Not going to make the playoffs with those guys.
No, you're not going to do that. so it makes for an interesting scenario where, let's say, Cleveland beats Baltimore. The Bengals could, in theory, spoil and knock a division rival out of the playoffs for the 2 years in a row in Week 17. They will need a Driscoll miracle to do that. By the way, he is terrible.
How do you really feel about
him? I mean,
Jeff?
Come on.
Well,
they're loading the box. He has no one to throw to. He has no one to throw to. They are loading the box, daring him to make a throw, and it's just the offensive line was bad. He had nobody getting. He didn't have much help.
He made one nice pass that I remember today to Erickson in the fourth quarter.
Yeah,
kind of down the sideline. That was a nice throw. Just saying. But you're right. You know, after obviously you have no AJ Green, now no Boyd. The drop off is steep after Boyd.
Yes.
I mean, it's a series. I mean, what you got, Erickson, Ross, who caught one touchdown. He had five targets.
Five targets, one reception. Two drops.
Cody Core, Tate. I mean, it's kind of the bottom of the barrel there. So Driscoll is not playing well, and he doesn't have anybody to throw to, and the offensive line isn't doing very well.
No.
So then it all obviously falls back on the quarterback, and he's not.
Not very good either.
Right. And then in the previous game, he was overthrowing balls.
Yes.
So I mean.
It's just sad. Yeah. It's sad. Like, being a Bengals fan, that has to be... I can't imagine watching that game as a fan. It's just got to be just demoralized.
Right, and you have a tremendous talent in Mixon, but he's all bottled up. There's no place for him to run.
Right, they had like 10 men in the box. Right. They're like, have everybody by the line of scrimmage and one deep safety. We dare you. You can't do it. It's something else. They could go to Pittsburgh and win. They could pull something. Oh, I don't know.
The Driscoll miracle.
They need the Driscoll miracle. Driscoll throws for 363 yards and four touchdowns.
I'm taking the under.
That ain't happening. Yeah.
No, it is not happening. When you consider how bad the Bengals have been against Pittsburgh over the years, and now having probably the worst team that they have fielded while playing the Steelers since God knows when, that does not feel like a thing that they have a chance to go win. What do we got here? Baker Mayfield stared down Hugh Jackson.
Why not, man?
Do we like that topic?
I like the topic.
So this thing just continues on. It just doesn't go away. And he just is shoving it in his face over at every opportunity. It was right after the essentially game-winning pass to David Njoku. And he stares him down, he runs away a little bit, then turns around and stares back at him again. He played it real coy after the game and basically said, when they asked him about it, he said, "I don't know what you're talking about," with a straight face. Basically just being like, obviously I know what you're talking about.
Paulie, I'm miffed.
You're slightly miffed?
I'm slightly miffed from this guy. Because, look, I understand that the Browns haven't had that kind of swagger for a long time.
Yeah.
And he brings it. And he brings confidence. And he brings a winning attitude. Okay? And I understand that the Browns fans and probably the media alike are eating it up right now. Okay? But this kind of stuff, if it continues, is going to get old. Whether it's next year, the year after that, especially if they don't continue to win, now you're going to have... You have Baker Mayfield doing this kind of stuff, okay? And he's not going to stop with Hugh because, people are eating it up. I'm going to keep doing it. No one's checking me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And I'll see Hugh twice next year.
Right?
Potentially.
So I don't think it's a good use of his energy. And I don't think it's a good use of the swagger that he brings. You know what I mean? Be confident. You just won the game against a beat-up Bengals roster, okay? But, act like a professional. Act like you've been there before. This is not – that kind of behavior isn't – you're not acting like a pro. You're not acting like you've been there before. So I'm miffed.
You don't like it?
I don't like it.
But they need that.
They need swagger. I get it. I really do get it. But it's going to get old.
Yeah, I agree that there will eventually be some – there'll be a moment where he plants the flag at midfield like he did at Oklahoma and everybody gets upset. But this is who he is, and at least I think it's fine if it's genuine. They had him third on the depth chart in August. They were playing Carlos Hyde 90% of the snaps instead of Nick Chubb. These dudes are pissed off at Hugh Jackson because they feel like he cost them a chance to be more competitive earlier.
Yeah.
And so I get that there's going to be some spillover there. This is who Baker's always been. He walked on twice, you know the story. He's always had this sort of attitude, and I think it's genuinely who he is, and I think it helps kind of motivate and inspire him.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. I mean, they feel like he sunk their season because everything was better right after he left. And, not playing Nick Chubb.
I mean, when Nick Chubb did play, when Carlos Hyde was still on the roster, he would, it seemed like he would take it to the house like every time.
And then he'd go sit back down on the bench.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's stuff like that.
And don't get me wrong. I may have come off a little harsh on Baker, but I think I understand. He brings a lot of swagger and attitude, and that's who he is. But and have fun with it right now. But someone's got to let him know, eventually you got to cool it a little bit and be a pro. Right now he's not being a pro. Let me rephrase. Some of this stuff he's doing isn't professional.
Yeah. I don't know. I guys need to do whatever they got to do to motivate themselves. I mean, and if that's what he needs and he's going to do that, then they're going to have to beat him. Yeah. You know?
Yeah,
right. You got to fight back at some point, and there's no fight. And Baker has made Hugh he's gotten the last laugh, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think he has. Baker's learned a little bit, because you know he was talking to the media quite a bit before the first matchup, and I think he said some things that maybe somebody got to him and said, hey, like, just go play. Maybe somebody can hand the ball to Hugh after an interception.
Yeah.
Or you can glare, but don't talk.
Yeah.
So at least, you know, after the game he didn't really have much to say about it, but I think he's learning a little bit on that front.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, after the game, that's another thing that annoyed me. Okay, if you're going to do that stuff, own it. If somebody asks you, don't be like, oh, I don't know what you're talking about and think it's cute.
Yeah.
Because it's not going to be cute later.
No.
Kareem, we're on different ends of the Baker spectrum.
It's not going to be cute later. If you're okay, you're going to stare down your old head coach. All right. Somebody asks you about it, own it, man.
Are you?
What's that?
You can say what you can say. I mean, just say, yeah, I did.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. of course I did.
Right.
You know? Yeah. That's because you're Fletcher. You're the young punk, and Kareem is the curmudgeon.
I'm a year older than Fletcher, man.
You're the curmudgeon, and Fletcher's a young punk. Anyway, so yeah, an interesting topic there, but that's going to be one that's going to be an issue for a long time. Long time. Bengals fans are going to get real sick of Punky Baker Mayfield over the next decade plus. Anything else we'd like to add? Anything else we feel like we need to get into?
I think it's been a great season for Joe Mixon, and I pointing out Baker's. Whatever you want to call it, the spectrum of Baker, I think Joe's really taken strides in maturity on and off the field. I mean, the past couple weeks especially, it's been pretty trying for him. He's had a lot of carries. He's getting beat up. He's had days like today where he's got 9-10 men in the box trying to stop him. It's frustrating times, and they're losing. And he's really handled himself very well in the locker room. So, pretty impressive.
He had an interesting thing to say after the game, you know, being asked generally about frustrations and stuff like that, that I thought was fairly telling. He said, "Let me read it to you if I can get it up here." Here it is. If I can get to it. Why is it taking me so long to get to it? Okay, here we go. Here it is. He said, "It's very frustrating. Never been a part of a losing program, and I'm never going to be comfortable with losing. At the end of the day, man, I'll take that for what it is. Build and try to get better for next year. I promise you, we're not going to be in this for long, and that's a fact." Resolute, pissed, not, you know, taking almost personal responsibility and throwing it on his back. I'm going to say that.
And pushing it forward, too.
Yeah.
Well, like I said a couple weeks ago, Mixon is going to be a superstar in this league, and I think the most talented players on a roster grow into that role of taking on the responsibility. I'm one of the best players on the team, so I have to speak about going into next season and thinking about how we're going to improve this team and how we're going to be better, because people are looking to me as one of the best players on the team to bring that winning attitude, continue with that winning attitude.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. I mean, we made fun of this in the off season, how with every free agent that was out there, Joe would like hit him up on Twitter, like, "You got to come to the Bengals. We need to go get this guy." And it was like, "Oh, that's cute, Joe. You don't understand how this works with this team." But this is kind of the same way. He's obviously not afraid to take that and go and say and try to. I don't know how to put this, but just try to be a leader about it, you know, and whatever that means. And try to make it be cool to be a Bengals player. You know, I don't know. All right. Trip report.
I got really dehydrated.
Yeah.
My first time in Cleveland.
Yeah, that does happen.
Didn't get a lot of sleep.
No. Well, you made the casino decision.
I did. I went into overtime in the night.
Which is questionable tactic for certain. The casino decision, I never advise that. And as far as I know, all those that went to the casino, which Kareem and I are proud to say was not us, sound like nobody came up ahead. And that's unfortunate as well.
Everybody lost money. Some of us, though, I did go to the cage and cash some chips out. So I felt decent about
it. You felt like you won money.
I felt like I didn't just completely tarnish my trip to Cleveland.
Yeah.
I was teetering on a tarnish, but I made it through.
Oh, the Cleveland trip every year is a good trip, man. And it's a good town. It's a fun town, good food, nice hospitality, nice people.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. The people are nice.
People are very nice in Cleveland. So, until next year, when we come to Cleveland.
And it was nice to drink Christmas ales right before Christmas. It made it feel even more special.
Delicious.
Well, it is. Well, last year it was so early, it didn't really hardly feel right to be having the winter Christmas, you know, stuff. But... You know what I mean?
The Christmas stuff.
The Christmas stuff.
I'm here for the Christmas stuff.
I'm here for the Christmas stuff. But now it felt perfect. It felt perfect, and that's why, I think that's why we drank so many of them.
Yes.
Because it fit perfectly into the schedule. So thanks to our good friends at Great Lakes actually has done, they did a combo event with 50 West. Early in November, where they did special beers and did a split tap with them, and it was like a whole barbecue event that was really awesome. So they have we can talk a lot about Great Lakes because they also are good friends with our good sponsor, and I gotta say, I have filled up a growler of the 50 West Christmas cookie.
Ooh.
It is waiting for me at my house. And it will not last through Christmas.
Party of Paulies after.
Yeah, no doubt. There is no doubt because that whole thing is not going to last long. So get it while it's hot. Excited about that. Did Kanye do anything recently?
I'm sure he did.
I do believe he's been in so many beefs. That it seems like he's always got some new beef that's going on. I know the Drake thing is still a thing, right?
Here's a couple of headlines.
Yeah.
Kanye West anoints Ice Cube and Too Short with GOAT titles. You're a 90s rap guy.
I am a 90s rap guy.
Ice Cube is
neither of those are the GOAT. They're fine. GOAT is so overused. Can I just...
Yeah, say it.
Go in.
Say it.
Go in.
Why do people keep doing this? Stop overusing GOAT.
Yeah.
Not everyone... It's literally the greatest.
Yes.
Like, one.
Unique.
Yes, so you can't, right? you can't have two GOATs. So that's already false.
It's got to be undisputable. Like you cannot dispute... When you make a claim like that, she better be the GOAT.
Yes.
Like Muhammad Ali.
Yes. What is Too Short the GOAT of? Oakland dirt rap? All right. What else
you
got?
I gave you one headline, now I get to read one sentence from a Kanye story. That's okay. How I'm going to do this now. The rapper tweeted a clip of himself in San Francisco riding tandem bikes with some buddies. Every time I do this, I'm amazed at these stories that come out. And people actually make a living typing these stories in because people read these stories.
They
mainly
do.
Mainly me.
Mainly. You always get the click. Tandem bikes has been a BBP theme this year. Because we had the Hugh and Marv on the tandem bikes together, which is still, which was still glorious.
It's been quite some time since we've seen some good Photoshop action.
I know.
Kind of laying dormant until we find out what happens here.
Yeah, where it will show up at.
Nudge, nudge.
Yes.
Right?
It's coming.
Where you guys been?
There's no doubt it's coming. Sad. Yeah. They've just been sad in the corner. Even Photoshop isn't fun anymore.
I've had a lot of fun on the Photoshop. I send Paul. I send Paul my Photoshops. I don't put them out on the internet because it's not professional, as Kareem would say.
No, Kareem wants you to be professional, even if you're just a young punk like Fletcher.
You guys are wild, man.
All right,
I'll get you guys a tandem bike.
Yeah, I'll ride a tandem bike. All right, we can wrap it up. I think we've hit all the high notes, and Kareem has been just killing it. It's starting to snow a little bit now.
Like so. I said earlier, I'm doing things in this car you don't even know what's going on, man.
But you've held down the lanes. You haven't made any questionable lane changes.
Well,
we got a nice vehicle here. You got the upgrade for us.
Hey, man, it's good. It's good to be me, man.
It is good to be you, getting those free upgrades in a beautiful. Beautiful car. All the bells and the whistles.
Mm-hmm. Heated steering wheel, buddy.
Oh, heated steering wheel, heated seats, all that stuff. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening to the BBP. We obviously will be Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. We do not have anything. Can I do another rant?
Yeah. Go in.
Why? Are cars going to advance technologically that when you drop your phone between the seats and under the seat, you can actually get to it somehow? Like, can we figure out a way to make that not be a problem anymore? Like, we're putting people on Mars soon. Okay,
it's
so
2019. I think this is a reasonable ask.
We need something because
it's not reasonable, yeah.
My phone's down below the seat, and I don't know if I'm going to get it until we stop.
It's dark in here.
It's dark. It's hard to reach down there. All right. Anyway, why are you still listening to this podcast if you are right now? Like, you have to just hate.
I was just about to say that. Probably like, all right.
What is wrong with these guys?
It's been a long day.
Yeah.
Anybody still listening?
If you're still listening, if you listen to this part, this is like, I always remember. You remember the show Robin Big? I'm just gonna go completely off of it. So I loved that show, and I bought the box set of all their episodes, and they would have some episodes where you could watch it with commentary, and it would just be like Robin Big or somebody else talking over top of the episode about stuff that how they filmed it or whatever. And like I remember thinking, like I'm watching this, and at the end, it's the end of some episode. I didn't know what they were talking about, and then he went on a whole thing about like, I just don't know why anyone would be listening to us right now. Why would anybody at minute 28 of this episode? Why are you even listening to us in the first place? Like they just had no like why would anyone care about this? That's where I feel like we're at right now.
I'm trying to get your phone for you, and I feel like. I feel like this is what it would be like on a tandem bike with you.
Yeah. It's hard to reach. It's down there. I will say, if you're still listening right now, say you listen to this part.
It's found this random plastic piece.
That is not it. Let's say if you listened through this discussion, as our apology to you, tweet us. They need to tweet us a password. Hashtag what? Which of that? Hashtag find Paul's phone. And
we'll know you're the realest.
We'll know that you are the realest of the real, and you'll have mad respect. And we will constantly put. And if you ever have questions We'll put you to the top of the line.
Whoa!
I don't know. I can't think of a good reward. I can't think of anything good on top. I'm trying to.
That's a really good one, is what I'm saying.
I don't know. Hey. We'll work on it. All right. Sorry, everybody. I apologize for all of this. What it's become. This podcast is the equivalent of the Bengals season. I feel like just went off the rails at the end. Just a total fuel to the dumpster fire is what the end of this podcast has been. All right, Cream, you're doing a great job behind the wheel, brother.
Thank you, and thanks for listening, everybody.
Yeah, yeah, and Merry Christmas. We love all you that listen, and so I hope you get all the things that you want for Christmas. And everybody loves all your gifts. Talk to you later.